On today's episode, Gregory Ash tells us what's next for Hazard in Somerset, and Justine reviews one crackerjack of a book.
Welcome to Gay Mystery Authors with Brad Shreve, featuring interviews with some of the most renowned authors and up-and-coming talent in LGBTQ mysteries, suspense, and thrillers. Plus, Justine Adamek is here with her weekly recommendation.
I'm going to start the show today with another shout out to a review that we got on iTunes. This came from No Spoiler Reviews, and it's a great review. It said, "Discover a rich world of mystery fiction. Join Brad and Justine in their gentle yet informative podcast about LGBTQ mystery novels for both writers and readers." So we're gentle and informative, Justine.
That's us. Yeah, we're being gentle.
No wacky morning shows from us.
That's true. That's true. I don't know, but we're kind of rough around the edges still, I think.
Well, we're getting there. We're getting there.
All right. It sounds like we're doing better with people who consider us gentle.
That is true. And you have some information about Buffy today.
Okay. Yeah. Buffy is offering a 20% discount, or is it $20 off?
$20 off.
$20 off. And all you have to do is put in the code FLUFFY20. That's FLUFFY20. And you can go to the Buffy link on our webpage, because that supports the show. Get yourself a great comforter and support our show at the same time, and get $20 off the price.
Yeah, let's make that clear. It is $20 off the price, so it's a better deal than 20%. So,
right. So let me just say, I'm still sleeping with my Buffy. I can barely tell I have a comforter on. And if you're the kind of person who needs a weighted blanket to sleep, this isn't for you. But if you're the kind of person like I am, where a weighted blanket is absolutely the last thing you would ever want, and you want to be warm without getting tangled, this is really the comforter for you.
Well, I said I was going to get one, and I haven't yet. I've been very lax. I'm actually leaning more towards a Buffy pillow, because I need a pillow more than a comforter.
Yeah.
And I've looked at the reviews for the Buffy pillow, and it looks pretty great too.
So. Yeah.
All right. And you have a review this week. Who are you reviewing?
I am reviewing a book that we got through our request for reviews. This book came in to the email address info@gaymysteryauthors.com. So if you want to have a chance to have your book reviewed on this show, feel free to send it along. And this book is by Jennifer Giacalone. And I don't know if I'm pronouncing that last name correctly. Giacalone. In case you need to know how to spell it, to search for it. And the title of the book is called Loud Pipes Save Lives. And the loud pipes, I believe it refers to the pipes on the back of the motorcycles. One of the characters is in a all-girls motorcycle gang. So let me give you a quick synopsis of what the setting for this is.
Okay.
There are four siblings, two male straight siblings. One is married. The other one at the beginning of the book is single and recently lost his legs. And there are then two sisters, one of which is a lesbian who is in a woman's biker gang. And the other one is, which is the main character, although not everything is from her point of view. And she is asexual. And she ends up going into a relationship in the middle of the book with another asexual woman. And I thought that was an interesting twist. I'm not sure that I have ever read a book where the main character is asexual. So that falls within the LGBTIA, and A is for asexual.
Well, that sounds interesting. That's new.
Yeah, it is new. Yeah, it is new for me. And I was, uh, I was, I was intrigued more than I thought I would. I tend to sometimes say, okay, that, you know, this person's straight, this person's gay, this person's non-binary. But when I realized that she was asexual, it piqued my interest quite a bit. So the main character, Lily Spar, is a police detective. Her sister Ainsley is in this biker gang. And the brother who has been recently lost his legs is doing charity work. They're all coming from a very rich family. And then the fourth brother is married and heads up the family business, which is a media and publishing company, which runs a couple of newspapers.
I'm going to take a guess here. Somewhere in this story, there's a murder.
You know, it's kind of funny because you kind of lay it out and it's like, oh, wow, this is a lot of pieces. Okay. So at the beginning, you're thinking that there's kind of this overlay with a biker gang. The biker gang is wreaking havoc and engaging in vigilante justice, and the one sister's in the biker gang and the other sister is in the is the police detective assigned to finding it. But then you realize, wait a minute, this fact where their father was murdered last year, that's the mystery we're supposed to solve. It's going to get my Cracker Jack recommendation. It's got a lot of flavors and textures going on. It's got the Cracker Jacks has got the popcorn and then the nuts and then the sweet and the slightly salty. And then at the end, there's a toy surprise. And at the end of this mystery, the solution picks up all these themes and clues that have been left along the way. And you say, okay, well, that's kind of a character background thing. And you don't really notice it, although you remember it when it comes to play at the end. And it works as well as Cracker Jacks does in terms of combining all the sensations and flavors and producing a great product.
So Jennifer is our first Cracker Jack recommendation.
She certainly is. And I got to say, there's as complicated as I'm making it sound, and I think it is that complicated, she makes it very simple to understand. She introduces each component very clearly, and then she starts getting into the mystery and rocking and rolling. And then at the end, all of a sudden, you're into the full-out finale. And I found it very absorbing and very satisfying.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah. So we got that through one of the, you know, the submission, and I was very pleased. I don't think I would have stumbled across it in my usual looking for books.
And good. I hope we get some more submissions. And I want to go back to the noise spoiler reviews. I told the review, but I didn't say thank you to them. And this came in over iTunes, and over half of you listen to us on iTunes. So if you go to iTunes, they make it really easy to do a review. If nothing else, click 5 stars. That's the easiest way to do it. But we'd like a review too.
Yeah. Well, if you do a review, we'll give a shout out. So
absolutely.
We can't give a shout out to the 5-star people because we have no idea who they are.
Nope, they could be anybody.
That's right. And so who are you interviewing today, Brad?
I have Gregory Ash, and I got to tell you, it's a great interview. So sit back and you'll really enjoy it.
I really like Gregory Ash. He's one of my favorite writers. I discovered him early in his writing career. And after I read a bunch of his books, I contacted him and said, this is really great. And since then, we've developed a relationship. So I consider it would be a non-objective review if I reviewed his books. But he is one of my favorite, and I'm looking forward to hearing his interview.
Well, he certainly is extremely popular. And like I said, it was a fun interview with Greg. So.
Great.
You'll enjoy it.
Good. Talk to you next week.
Okay. See you then.
See you then. Talk to you. Bye.
You can keep up with the Gay Mystery Authors on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Links are on our website, gaymysteryauthors.com.
Gregory Ash is a longtime Midwesterner. He's lived in Chicago, Bloomington, Indiana, and St. Louis, which is his current home. When not reading and writing, which takes up a lot of his time, he is an educator. Gregory's latest novel is The Rational Faculty, A Hazard in Somerset, A Union of Swords, which is currently available to pre-order. Gregory, thank you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you on.
Well, I've enjoyed listening to your other authors. This is a real honor. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate that you listen to us. Now, you first published in 2011, and you wrote a number of books, but in 2017, you released Pretty Pretty Boys, and that was the first in your Hazard and Somerset mysteries, and that's when things really took off for you, didn't they?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, explain the series for us, without too many spoilers, of course.
Yeah, well, so Emery Hazard starts off in book one. He's kind of the focal character. He's the main protagonist, and he comes back to his hometown, which is a small town in Missouri, and has gotten a job there as a detective on the local police force. He's kind of he left kind of under a cloud his job as a detective on the St. Louis police force, and on his first day finds out he's been partnered with his former high school bully, whose name is John Henry Somerset. And so the books follow, they are mystery novels with a strong romance subplot, and they follow these two men, you know, Hazard and Somerset, as they solve kind of a mystery in each book, and also then as their own relationship unfolds, and they kind of move past the trauma that they both have in their background. And I don't want to give away, I'll just say at the end of book six, which is the end of the first arc, you know, they still have some things to work on, you know, so they move forward, but there's always more to work on.
What do you believe it is about this particular series that made it so successful?
Yeah, that's a hard question, because I think you never really know why some books do well and why others don't. Certainly part of it was, like, looking at my own work, you know, some of it was I was just a better writer, you know, like I think everyone gets better, you know, as they write, and they, you know, I think by the time I got to Pretty Pretty Boys, I was doing some of the things that I wanted to do well. And so I think that paid off. And I think part of it is I was finally starting to categorize my books on Amazon in the gay mystery genre, which I had resisted. I'd resisted tagging or putting any of my books in the gay category because I had this, I don't know, irritation, or I thought it was silly that I had to do that. Like, I was like, it's a fantasy book. Why can't I just put it in fantasy, even though the protagonist is gay? Or it's a mystery. Why can't I just put it in mystery? And then I realized, like, one day I was like, this is silly. Like, when I want to read a book that has a gay protagonist, I go look in the gay mystery genre. Like, why wouldn't I do the same thing to help people find my book? And so I do think that also helped, you know, putting it in the right spot and using the right tags. But, you know, at the end of the day, I don't know. Like, it was the right readers and it was the right book and people connected with it. And so I think, you know, there's some alchemy there that you can't control.
Well, I definitely think coding as a gay mystery on Amazon would make a huge difference. As you said, it's a shame that has to happen, but that's the way life is.
Yeah.
Have your readers, in either commenting to you directly or in your comments on Amazon, give you any ideas to
That's a great question. I don't read any reviews on Amazon or Goodreads or Facebook. Like, and it's not because I don't want to know, but it's because it becomes kind of all consuming, and it's a rabbit hole. And so I will talk to other people that have read them, and I'll ask for kind of the highlights. And so, you know, I think people have, from what I understand, you know, what friends and readers have kind of communicated when I've asked them to give me the shorthand version, is, you know, people connect with Emery Hazard, you know, and they like that character. They like his dynamic with with Somers, John Henry Somerset. There's a lot of back and forth. And so, but yeah, that's all kind of filtered through people I trust.
Well, I will say you're a smart man staying out of Goodreads, if anything else. I don't know if you read reviews there. You know, somebody isn't wild about your book on Amazon, they may say so. On Goodreads, they rip you to shreds. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know why that is.
I agree, though. That is, and that community can go the other way too, right? Where they are also your biggest advocates and your biggest fans can be on there. It's certainly more of the extremes at both ends.
Yeah, you know, it's not uncommon to look at somebody's ratings. You look at all the books they rate, and they're all either fives or ones. Uh-huh. There's no in-betweens. They either like it or they don't, and that's the way it is.
Yeah.
So it's just a different animal. Kind of interesting the way it works there. As you said, you've written six books in the Hazard and Somerset series, and that arc has ended. So that part of the series is technically ended.
That's right.
But your newest book, The Rational Faculty, which, as I said, is currently available for pre-order, is an extension of that. It's
right.
It's the first in the Hazard and Somerset, A Union of Swords series.
That's right.
What makes that different than the previous novels?
Well, I don't want to give too much away about how book six ends in that first arc, but there's some pretty major life changes for both of the protagonists. And so that's part of it. Is book one, they come back and professionally they're operating in a different way as they approach these crimes. The first six book arc also had like a longer background mystery that had to do with the death of Emery Hazard's first boyfriend. And so that's also resolved in book six. And so I thought it was time, because of the big changes in both kind of their professional and personal lives and the shift to a new series long arc, I thought it made sense to brand this as kind of a season two almost of Hazard and Somerset. Yeah.
Well, since you sort of ended that first arc, yet you continued with Hazard and Somerset, I'm assuming that you loved something about those characters. What is that?
Something that I love, is that what you said?
Yeah, about your characters, Hazard and Somerset. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I do love them. That's true. Like, I think Emery Hazard has a lot of anger, and he's also somewhat emotionally detached, and he is he's like a little bit of a stick in the mud, and like all of those are traits that I sympathize with.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Somers, on the other hand, is fun to write because he is everybody's buddy. He's nice. He is much, much smarter than he gives himself credit for, but he is also kind of the master at manipulating Hazard. I say it in a good way. Like, he knows how to let some of the steam off.
Yeah, manipulation gets kind of a bad rap. We tend to think of it in a negative, but actually manipulation can be a positive as well.
Yeah.
So it sounds like in this situation, it's very much an opposite of track.
It is. It's an opposite. It is the kind of opposite of track, but they have a shared set of values and they have things in common that are just less obvious maybe. So, yeah.
Now, if somebody wants to order The Rational Faculty, where would they go?
So it's up for pre-order on Amazon, and on the 28th, which is the day it launches, it'll also be available at Smashwords and Kobo and Barnes & Noble and iBook or Apple, whatever that is, iTunes, iBook. I can't keep it all straight, but it'll be everywhere on the 28th.
Pretty much everywhere, and that's for both ebook and paperback?
The print will only be at Amazon to start with, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Pretty Pretty Boys was your first mystery novel. Is that correct?
That's right.
Who were your inspirations to write mysteries?
Oh, my gosh. Let's see. So I love, you know, Raymond Chandler. I love Sue Grafton. I think Dennis Lehane is one of my favorite, like, current writers, but probably the person that taught me that I learned how to do a mystery from reading was Agatha Christie, like the Miss Marple books. I think that, like, sometimes the most stripped down version of a genre is what teaches you how to do it well. So, like, you know, those golden age mystery novels are really stripped down in terms of character and subplots, but they show you how to do the mystery part really well.
Yeah, that's definitely true of Agatha Christie. Sherlock Holmes, I don't know. He kind of pulled some things out of his hat sometimes to solve his mysteries, but you're definitely going to the core with Agatha.
Well, and I think that point about Holmes, and also if you look at, you know, Poe's, or the, you know, kind of the invention of the mystery novel, like, the my issue with both of those tends to be that you see them from the kind of dim-witted partner, you know, and it's also like the detective has access to all this information that the reader might not, you know. I could never solve a Sherlock Holmes mystery because I don't like, I don't know all those random facts. And that wasn't the kind of mystery that I wanted to write.
Well, that's Holmes would be something like, well, there was this mud on his shoe is the only type of mud that you ever find on Hong's Tooth Hill. And like, well, he doesn't play fair with the reader.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you said you're an average reader. Who are you reading now?
Let's see. I just finished Stephen King's The Institute. Right now I'm reading Annie Dillard's Tinker at Pilgrim Creek, which is not a mystery. It's kind of a nature writing book, but it won the Pulitzer, you know, in the 70s, and it's exactly what it sounds like. It's kind of like her life at this place called Pilgrim Creek in West Virginia, and it's just really beautiful writing.
Well, I think it's good to always get outside of your own genre.
Yeah.
You can learn quite a bit.
Yeah, I feel like if I read a lot of mysteries, but I feel like I have to, when I step away and read something else, like you said, there's kind of these other aspects of the craft that are more visible if I look at something else.
Are there any particular mystery writers that you follow currently? Even more specific, perhaps gay mystery writers?
Oh man, well, I know I'm going to leave people out. So I love, you know, Marshall Thornton's Boys Town. I love the C.S. Poe's, and you had Carol on, but I love the Snow and Winter, Josh Lanyon's Adrian English. That's also a genre where there's so much for me to explore still. So I'm still reading and listening to the recommendations on this podcast and kind of reading around to find new stuff.
Well, that's actually the whole reason I started this show. And it is kind of an unfair question because you're like, oh my God, there's so many. I don't want to leave anybody out. And
I know and there's so many good ones too, which is awesome.
That is, it is pretty awesome. And I gotta say, all the books that you just listed are really good books in my opinion.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You have good taste.
Thank you.
Well, let's go back to where it all began. What, describe to us your writing journey.
Yeah, I think like a lot of people, I would say that I wrote pretty early on, but I did take this break kind of somewhere in like middle school, high school age. Like, I was like, man, I'm writing these, like, you know, I'm not a very good writer, but like, I was just doing it for fun, so I guess I'll stop. And then I had it in my head that I wanted to come back at some time. And like, I was 25 and I was in grad school and I was like, realized I was on this road trip and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm 25, which is not that old, but when you're 25 and all of a sudden 30s on the horizon, it starts to feel pretty old. I just was like, this is silly. Like, I've been telling myself I'm going to write a book for a long time and I don't know when that's going to happen if I don't do it. So I sat down, I started writing, and I wrote for 10 years before Pretty Pretty Boys was successful. So I mean, it was a long time of writing and trying to learn and reading and writing and throwing stuff away. And that's it in a nutshell, I guess.
Yeah, people are like, oh, he's an overnight success. And you're like, I don't think so.
It was a real long night. It was really long. Yeah.
But it's funny what you were saying. I used to moderate, before I started this podcast, I moderated a Facebook group for beginning writers. And I'm talking about very green writers. And it was so often that we'd get people that say, well, I'm 25. Do you think it's too late?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know, but when you're that age, it seems like...
Yes, it does. I remember.
Yeah.
So I totally get that.
That's funny.
What do you think are common traps for aspiring writers?
Boy, I would say common traps for aspiring writers. One would be not reading enough, I think. I think a lot of writers, especially if they have hit some success with that first book, start to turn all their attention to other things. So and that shows up in a lot of ways, like not reading enough, too much time on social media, not writing the next book. Like before that, if it's before, you know, for people that are really just picking up like a, you know, the pen, which nobody does, if people are just sitting down for the first time to write on a Word document, I think there's problems with, probably the two biggest problems are like structure and then prose, like knowing what to tell and how much of it and when, you know, like those are tricky, hard things. And I think there's no way to learn them except just practice and doing them over and over and over again.
Yeah. Even Stephen King says he reads, he says he claims he's a slow reader, yeah. But he also says he reads 52 books a year. So
yeah,
I don't know where he finds the time. I sure don't, but I try to do the best I can.
Well, I think I read that same thing from him, because when I read that, I switched over to audiobooks in the car. I stopped watching TV. Like, I have a TV out in my front room. I don't know when the last time was I watched it. I mean, yeah, because like you said, there's just not enough time. I'm sure you're in the same boat with the podcast, with your own writing, with being involved in your own social media presence. I mean, there are a lot of things that will eat up your time.
Yeah, it's funny because I really think it's important to read to mm-hmm. hone your craft and to mm-hmm. continue reading, but you also have so much else going on. How do you balance it all?
Right. No, I think probably the answer is nobody does a great job of balancing it, because we're all, you know, like, but like my choices have been, as much as I would like to be more involved with my readers on Facebook or on Twitter, I've had to say, you know, that's the part I'm going to do less of, because I really feel like the greater service to them is learning how to write a good book, writing a good book, getting them the good book on time. You know, there's X number of people on Facebook that want to talk to me, and I'm happy to do it when I have a minute, because I really do feel like that's an honor to have someone care enough about your books to talk to you. I really do. But there's a bigger number of people out there just waiting for the next one. And so I think, you know, you serve more people by doing your job as a writer.
That's very well said. You know, I think I interact in my group, and you know, it's a small number of people, but I tend to think, oh, this is it. But then when I look mm-hmm. at the actual number of books I sold compared right. to how many in the group, I think you're right on target.
Well, thanks. Yeah. And it's never meant as, you know, for people who are listening who might be shaking their fists at me saying, you know, why aren't you answering my Facebook message? There's no malice or ego. I just have so little time. And I really do appreciate that people care about it enough and care about, you know, my work enough to want to talk. So that's real praise and an honor. So.
Well, what surprised you most about becoming a writer?
How hard it was. I mean, it still feels so hard. Like, I mean, you know, I was just sitting here today before you mm-hmm. called, working on this little side project that I have, and I just get so frustrated sometimes, and I want to know what day, when's the day when it's like going to be easy every time, but I don't know. It's not today, that's for sure.
Well, Michael Nava was one of my first interviews, and he said, it never gets easier.
No, Michael. Can you take it back? Can you edit that part out?
I was like, thanks a lot. Thanks for letting me know.
Thank you. That's so funny. Well, it's good to know that I'm not. I mean, has that been your experience as well? I mean,
I was really surprised how hard it is. I was surprised how lonely it is.
Yeah, yeah.
And even when you love what you're writing, just trying to get the right words. So, yeah. It was surprising to me how hard, because I love to write. And yet, you think if you love to do something, you can just sit down and do it. And mm-hmm. some days it's a lot easier to just stay on Facebook. And
Yeah, it is. I agree.
It can be a rabbit hole.
Yep.
Now, what are your feelings regarding the state of gay mystery genre today?
Oh my gosh. It's like an abundance of riches. It's just awesome how many people are writing. It's awesome that it's moving into, I guess, what we could call mainstream fiction. You know, like there's less and less of the ghetto effect. And part of that is, you know, shifts in mainstream culture, you know, about attitudes towards homosexuality and all that stuff. But part of it is that there's just so many dang good writers. You can't ignore them forever. You know, I mean, there's just so many good stories with gay protagonists. And I think, you know, my hope is that it continues to move that way.
I agree with you, and I think it will.
Yeah, I really hope so.
Now, you have a sizable group of loyal fans.
I know people I'm really grateful for. Yeah, they're there. Yeah.
What is the most rewarding thing you've heard from a reader?
Oh, gosh. I don't want to, so I won't give the specifics. And I'll actually kind of lump a few together. But multiple, so, you know, I have, all of my books deal with, I think, issues that are serious for me and that are meaningful to me. And I think, you know, among those are things like abuse, depression, mental health. And I have had a number of readers write to me and say that they connected with a book because they had experienced something similar, and that it was helpful just to hear someone else's version of it, you know, to know that they weren't the only one that they experienced something like that. You know, that's a real trust to write to someone you've never met and share that part of your life. And I am kind of awed every time it happens. And I think, like, my hope is that, you know, the genre fiction and literature in general can be either really uplifting or it can be really disheartening. And I hope that what I'm writing is uplifting. I hope that it's touching these people in a way that, you know, makes it easier to go out and live in a difficult world. I feel like the world's hard enough. Like, I don't need to read a depressing book on top of it. But yeah, so I would say those are the kind of the interactions that have been the most meaningful to me.
So this is going to be a silly question. When you get those kind of comments, how does that make you feel?
Well, I feel, again, you know, like there's this incredible sense of, like, responsibility to the reader to treat these things with respect, to treat them with respect. And of course, like, you know, kind of, it's humbling in the sense that I just kind of can't believe that people are willing to share these things with me because of something I wrote. And I do feel honored and, you know, and grateful that they are willing to do that.
Is there any particular thing that was funny that you've heard from a reader?
Oh my gosh. I did have someone send a t-shirt to me with like every joke I made about a certain body part. I won't say which one.
Oh, come on.
No, I'm not going to say any more than that. But I have the t-shirt. I have worn it once. And that made me laugh really hard. I thought, mostly because I did not realize I had written so many jokes about that body part. And I was like, oh boy, I feel like I better take a step back.
But a t-shirt, how awesome is that?
It was pretty cool. It was pretty cool. And the same reader sent me a picture. Apparently they also had a coffee mug made with the same quotes. And I thought, oh gosh, don't take it to work. Don't take it to work.
Well, by refusing to tell us, you've avoided me having to put an explicit label on this episode.
Good, so. Good. I'm glad I did. That's something for the reader. That's right. Oh, man.
It's time in our show, which you're a listener, so you're well aware of it.
I know.
It's time for our awkward question that authors get.
So it's no longer that authors hate. I've heard the change.
Yeah, I used to say authors hate, but they're not always that we hate. But we do definitely get some awkward questions asked of us.
That's right.
You know, like, how many books do you sell or how much do you make and that sort of thing, which yeah. I would never ask you that. But we're going to spin the wheel here and see what comes up.
All right.
Here we go. Okay. This is not one of the easier ones.
Oh, boy.
How come I've never heard of you?
Can I give my smart aleck response first?
Absolutely.
Well, so someone came up to me recently. I won't say where, but someone came up to me and said, I didn't finish your book. And I wanted to say back, that's okay, I didn't finish yours. But my real answer is, that's just the little sarcastic voice in the back of my head. The real answer is, you know, I would say I'm still starting out, right? Like, I'm still building a career. I do think that when you write gay mystery, you write for a subset of a genre, right? And that subset is kind of necessity going to have fewer readers. I hope that as I write more books and as I get better at my craft and I get more work out there, that maybe you will have heard of me, you know, instead of just kind of bumping into me on the street.
Well, I think your second answer was accurate, but I liked your first one better. Anybody that asked that question deserves that answer.
All right, I like that. I'll go with it.
Would you like to tell us about the other two series that you've written?
Yeah, so the other series I have right now, I have one that's called The Hollow Folk, which is a paranormal YA. And it's about a boy who moves to Wyoming, kind of is forced to move to Wyoming. And he is a reluctant psychic, which I feel like is, it's a well-trod trope, but I hope I've done something new with it. And so that's one, Hollow Folk. And the other series I have is the Borealis Investigations, which is a mystery series. It's set in St. Louis, but it has a private detective. Well, a pair of best friends who are private detectives working in the city, and they specialize in LGBTQ cases.
And I know the Borealis effect.
Borealis Investigations.
Okay, the Borealis Investigations, I'm sorry. No, I know that you've written less of those. Do you anticipate putting more of those out?
Yeah, so I have three right now, and that's the full arc for that first set of books, and I do think I'll write another three book arc, but you know how it is. I think I looked at your webpage and you've got five or six prospective books on your list of things that are coming out, right?
Yeah, I probably put more on there than I should, because who knows when I'll actually get around to them, but
that's how I feel.
You know, I've got so many notes for future books that they're definitely going to come, but how soon? Well, my next book is way late. It was supposed to be out. My anticipation was this podcast would start after that book comes out, and that did not happen. So,
yeah.
So now I'm trying to do both.
All right. Well, yeah. So, So I will be writing more, but kind of like you said, the question is when.
Yeah. Now, what about the young adult series? Are you going to continue writing young adult novels?
Oh gosh. I started a spinoff actually just a couple weeks ago as a kind of a back burner side project. So, there will be a few spinoffs of that Hollow Folk series that probably will come out sometime next year. Because they're back burner, they just kind of get my attention when I have a few minutes. And so I don't have a real clear timeline on those.
Well, you know, I keep seeing more and more people writing young adult queer novels, and I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, there's really, I think that is really the genre that has the most potential in some ways, because that's an age where kids will read about queer characters without maybe the same level of bias that they might as an adult. And I just know I teach high school, and I've always been shocked when I see kids that I would have never expected holding a book that has an LGBTQ protagonist, and they don't even bat an eye. So I really think that's a genre that has a lot of room to grow.
I would think it'd also be very rewarding to write.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think so too. And, you know, kids that age need someone they can see in the mirror, you know?
So again, to put you on the spot, have you seen any students walking around with your books in their hands?
No. Yeah, and you know, my kids know I write, but they don't know my pen name. I do use a pen name because there is some explicit content in the books, and, yeah. I think your last guest spoke about this as well. There's as a public school teacher, you got to walk a real fine line. So
I would think that'd be difficult to, because my ego is so big. People ask, are you going to use a pen name? I'm like, no, I want those idiots back in high school I want them to know this is me on that wrote this book. You know, what are they doing? I'm writing books.
Yeah, there are some days like that. There are some days where I wish, you know, where I wish it were different, but, you know.
Understandable. I'm not a teacher, so.
It's just one of those things where you know, maybe down the road that'll be different. But right now, I think that's kind of the way it's going to have to be.
Okay, so you said that right now you are currently available for pre-order on Amazon. And then once the book is released, you'll pretty much be available everywhere.
That's right.
If somebody wants to reach you, what's the best way to do that?
The best way is probably to go to my website, www.gregoryashe.com. I have a form on there to send me a message, and I have a form on there to join my mailing list. I respond to every message I get. I promise I will write you back. And if you just want some free short stories, or you want to be part of a giveaway, I do those on my mailing list.
It's been a pleasure having you on the show today, Gregory.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for being on. Hey, you know that book you just finished? Be sure to go back and leave a comment. Not only does it make the author feel better and help other readers, it'll make you feel better as well.